djmcloud.com, podcast number 61. There's stuff going on with between Twitter and Instagram. They're not showing Instagram photos in the Twitter stream anymore, and I guess Instagram has cut off support for Twitter's quote unquote cards feature. So what do you think about that, Jessica?
I think it's kind of sad because people are starting to stake claims on the internet and they're not keeping the open sharing community vibe that it could and should be.
No.
No.
Well, Instagram is now owned by Facebook, right?
Yeah. And I think if you are the superior platform, you would think of the users first.
Well, who's the superior platform here?
Nobody is, because they're not plain fair.
Oh, superior in the way that they run their business.
Yeah, you know, and really thinking about long-term affinity and brand loyalty. What are you really here to do as a company, you know?
Is there a substantial group of people for whom Instagram is the social network now?
I would say so.
Now, you know, like, I guess there are people that are even, you know, Instagram had often been connected, I think, closely to Twitter in a lot of people's minds. But I guess that as Instagram has rolled up and kind of gotten enough momentum of its own, it started to kind of move into territory where a lot of people see it as a social network in itself. And they did recently roll out those Instagram user pages. So now on the web, you can see the collection of photos someone has taken in their Instagram account.
Yeah, and in the article you have in the show notes, it says that that's what Instagram's response was, that they wanted to show and push the web pages more. So, I don't know. I mean, the web is always changing and moving and fluctuating, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how people respond to this. I think the article also said that Twitter is going to start offering filters.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk that they're going to offer filters for their photo feature. I mean, they can only build that feature up, right? All they really have now is a basic upload facility.
Yeah.
For photo sharing.
Twitter needs to, I think, get on the ball a bit. You know, it needs to figure out what it wants to do. It needs to stake its claim. I think it's kind of been sluggish the last year or so with the, I think since the introduction of its advertising and sponsored it. It's sort of, I feel like it's lost its cool edge and direction, and it's getting that mass appeal now, and I'm looking for it to take us to the next step.
Well, you know, in other apps and cloud services that are out there, Gmail has a new iOS app. You know, I don't know if you've seen that, because I think you sometimes use your mail app, right, on your iPhone, whereas I tend to be more of a Gmail app user. So they had some issues with being kind of down or, you know, not working, but now they've unveiled their new app, and it's a bit like their new web interface. When you swipe down to refresh, that circle with the different Google colors flashing comes up, just like in the, you know, in on the web page at Gmail. And it's, you know, it's a lot of white, a lot of light color text, right? So it's a very kind of like white, I guess you might say kind of clean looking, pretty modern, hyper modern looking. What do you think?
Yeah, it's very minimal. And you know what, I think that's good, because a lot of people are probably accessing this on their phones, and it's a really small screen, so
yeah.
Want to get the information, you know, and this is very neat and clean, and, you know, it's got your, I got, are these your you've got these color-coded tags that show up.
Yeah, so it supports the tags that a lot of people use, the label system, where you can use filters to set up different types of emails going into different types of labels. And then those labels will, as you say, they're very highly supported on this interface.
Yeah, so, I mean, it looks good. You know, it looks just the bare necessities coming over, and then you click into an email and it's easy enough to read and see the actions. Oh, they got the big action buttons down at the bottom.
Well, yeah, and then also there's some buttons at the top for using for when you want to do stuff like archive a message. They've moved some of the buttons around.
Yeah, well, this is pretty cool, you know. Got some nice features on it, I think. And this is the Gmail app?
Yeah, it's the Gmail app for iPhone. So you can get it at iOS, you know, at the iOS App Store.
What about this app on your tablet?
You know, I'm not sure I've upgraded the latest version on the tablet, so I'll have to report back about the Android version, because those two are somewhat different apps, so I think I would have to make sure to kind of review them separately.
Sounds good.
Cool. You know, there's this video that's in the show notes as well. You can find the show notes at djmcloud.com. This video is called Breaking the Taboo.
It's June 1971, and President Richard Milhouse Nixon is in a fighting mood.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one in the United States, the problem of dangerous drugs.
That was a time where you had both rising levels of sort of crime, and there was more sort of agitation around civil rights and all of this. You also had the hippies, and you had marijuana as a counterculture.
So, you know, it goes through the history of the drug war, kind of starting from Nixon. Of course, you could go back to J. Edgar Hoover and, you know, a long way, but it goes through the history of the modern drug war. It's narrated by Morgan Freeman, and the whole theme of it is the idea of breaking the taboo in politics about talking about alternatives to the current drug strategies, things like legalization. And they have different former Latin American head of states, Ernesto Zedillo of Mexico and other people like that, a guy from Brazil, who they talk about the failures of the drug wars in their own country. And so they're talking about, they're actually, you know, taking these very mainstream Latin American leaders, not even the more left-leaning ones that are even, say, in power now, that are you know, also against the drug war, like Evo Morales in Brazil. I mean, they don't even have to go that far. They go to these guys from, you know, Brazil. And I mean, Evo Morales is a Bolivia. But, you know, it's like, no, they just go to these guys who are these very mainstream politicians. And in some cases, including Bill Clinton, they seem to kind of talk about regretting the policies they supported. And, you know, they seem to kind of be in favor of rethinking it. And then again, when they were in office, they really didn't.
Right.
And they have Carter, who did do some things, but not nearly enough. You know, and so these guys and others are interviewed in it. And, you know, it goes through, the you know, drug war stuff.
And that basically, it's been a failure.
Absolutely a failure.
Yeah.
So when we say no to drugs, it'll be clear that we mean absolutely none.
Not even stuff for the housewives.
In spite of the massive and sustained efforts of law enforcement, demand for illegal drugs has continued to rise.
You know what you
do? Heroin use spiked in the early 70s. Then there was cocaine.
The government was completely unprepared for the explosive growth of the drug problems. I think we totally misunderstood cocaine.
Originalmente Colombia era el país donde se procesaba, pero la producción estaba en Bolivia y en Perú. Después también se empezó a cultivar en Colombia.
So now we have, you know, a lot of changes already out the way, like in Washington and Colorado, like we've talked about, they legalized marijuana. And I think the next logical steps will involve legalizing pretty much any drug, because I still think that's the better option, even if it's better to advise against their use. I think it's still better to legalize.
Yeah, just let people make their own choice.
There's another really big issue, and actually Washington is just starting to allow gay marriage, and there's other states that are approving it, and you know there's a lot of progress going on that front. So what do you think of the kind of reversal of the previous situation where gay marriage was going down in a lot of votes? Now it's being approved in a lot of states, so the tide is really turning.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's starting to be this shift in consciousness, and I think this is what the actual Mayan calendar refers to more. But a time when we start to realize that, you know, we all just want to live the lives that we want to live, and let's create a world where we can do that. And there's so many things that have gone wrong, and you know, presidents have gotten away with so many things, and it's just time to end that.
Yeah, there are states like California that voted down equal marriage rights for gay and lesbian people, and now like states like Washington have voted it up. So, you know, maybe partly, you know, the states are making their own decisions, but I think as time moves forward, it's amazing how sharp this change has been, where the issue is totally turned around in just a few years in terms of the public opinion.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, you know, there's even, you know, some very establishment people that are saying things like that.
Some big news on the Supreme Court on Friday. They took up two big gay marriage cases, one on the Defense of Marriage Act, which denies federal benefits to couples that are legally married in various states. But perhaps more interestingly, they took up the Proposition 8 case, which banned gay marriage in California, which at least leaves open the possibility that they get to the underlying question whether gay marriage is a guaranteed right under the Constitution.
As part of equal protection. Peter Finley Dunn, great American humorist, created a man named Mr. Dooley, who famously said, the Supreme Court follows the election returns. This decision by the Supreme Court came 31 days after an election day in which three states, for the first time, endorsed same-sex marriage at the ballot box. Never happened before. Maine, Maryland, and the state of Washington. Now, the question is, how well will that influence the court? It could make them say, it's not necessary for us to go here. They don't want to do what they did with abortion. The country was having a constructive accommodation on abortion, liberalizing abortion laws. The court yanked the subject out of democratic discourse and embittered the argument. They may say, we don't want to do that. We can just let the democracy take care of this. On the other hand, they could say it's now safe to look at this because there is something like an emerging consensus. Quite literally, the opposition to gay marriage is dying. It's old people.
That is true. At the same time, James Carville, right now at least, and this might argue for the split the difference position that George talked about, 41 states still outlaw gay marriage.
So conservative George Will saying that the opposition to gay marriage is dying.
Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, it is. Both with the people of the generation who are older, and I think figuratively in a lot of people's mind, realizing that they don't need to hold on to those beliefs from the past.
Well, another thing that maybe will change, although this one doesn't really seem to be showing much headway right now, is what if we stopped the drone attacks that we're doing? Like there's, I know this is something that comes up a lot, but there's this article that I put in the show notes because I think it's pretty well written. It's on and it's up. It's very recent issues at the New York Review of Books by David Cole. And this is the thing. Let me just read from the first paragraph if I can.
quote, what would President Romney do with a drone? The New York Times reported Sunday that this question apparently haunted the White House so much that in the weeks before the election, it raced to establish, quote, explicit rules, unquote, and, quote, clear standards and procedures, unquote, for the use of unmanned drones for targeted killings. It should not be surprising, I suppose, that the administration was less comfortable with someone else pushing buttons to kill people than with its own exercise of that authority, unquote.
Yes. And, you know, the American people, they don't have any insight into what the rules are, what the regulations are, what the criteria.
Exactly.
You know, for these strikes. And the government is using a lot of laws that they made up themselves to use as cover.
Right, I mean, or just executive orders or really flimsy stuff, and it's all secret. Threat. We don't really know. What it comes down to is that we don't really know because even their supposed procedures are secret, right? And the actual procedures apparently needed a lot of shoring up if they were going to hand it off to Romney. Of course, you know, they're okay with... I mean, it's totally secretive. What is their authority? What is their legal authority to shoot foreigners and Americans overseas with drones in countries that we have not declared war or authorized the use of military force, as far as I know?
It's just plain murderous. And
yeah.
The American government represents us as American people, so we have to cry out about how disgusted we are with this behavior and demand to know and demand the government to answer to this, because it's just unacceptable. You know, like,
yeah.
We just do not go around and kill people. We just don't do it. It's inhumane.
Yeah, I mean, let alone the idea that it's an unhelpful tactic in terms of advancing overall American interest. It, just forget about that. It's just not acceptable to ever do. You know, right? And I mean, but both arguments are pretty compelling. I mean, if you with a wide enough audience, so it would just. People need to start thinking critically about this president.
Yes. I mean, hold him to things that you want answers about, you know? Don't let him slide off, you know? I mean, I think he even says, you know, in the article it quotes him talking about that on The Daily Show, that he needs to be held accountable. And I think, you know, we need to, you know? As Americans, yeah. We gotta stand up for what we believe in and hold our president accountable. He is our figurehead leader.
Can you know the guy that didn't become president, Mitt Romney? Can you believe some of the things some of these people are saying at this rally?
Oh boy!
I think I sent you the link, right? This group, this gang of characters at this rally.
It's funny at first. The first time I watched it was funny, and then I watched it again before we recorded this, and it was just sad because, you know. The reporter, the interviewer, he's not being menacing. He's just really asking them, why do you think it would be better?
He's being very deadpan, I think. Like, you can almost tell he's almost smirking, but not really. And he's deadpan enough that he's shooting straight and letting them bring the crazy.
And it's just sad because, you know, no one can articulate, you know, and... I'm sure editing, whatever.
Right,
found the best people. And
they're not George Will, but you know, I mean, they don't have any solid idea or reasonable, just talking point. Even that's the righty. They're just not even on like a talking point because they ask some questions about like what the government you know is doing spending on that they don't like, and you know it turns out the government is probably helping out the corporations and. The military industrial complex and the prison industrial complex and stuff like that a lot more than it's helping any kind of outgroup that they can identify, you know, and so the traditional resentment politics, they don't really work in this era when so much of the money is going to the 1% and people are bereft of ideas, right? The traditional politics of resentment are breaking down, fortunately, right? I mean, the different groups like maybe being moved into American society, maybe a little better. But like, yeah, this kind of stuff, right? Like, I could just play like a clip of some of what these people are saying. Just kind of come in at like a random spot, even, and refresh YouTube here.
Good workers, but that's not gonna get the people. who are voting for him is so they can continue to get their handouts. And that's not what America's about.
Mitt Romney, tell us why you want to see him become the next president of the United States.
Because he's the guy to get it done.
Romney's a business guy. He's got a good head on his shoulders.
I can't think of anything about Mitt Romney that I just don't really like.
He's a family man. He's a Christian. Yeah. He doesn't believe in abortion. He doesn't believe in homosexuality. And let me tell you, I believe in God. And God is going to make sure Mr. Romney wins.
I'm never going to be able to pay this debt off.
What is that?
$50,000 a piece. Do you have $50,000?
No.
I don't either.
How do you see Mitt Romney getting the deficit down?
Well, you know, he's got some plans. I'd still like to see really what some of his ideas are out there.
Tell us a bit about the Romney plan, what you know you hope he does, given a chance to be president.
This is what you said.
Changes, lots of changes.
I don't know what he's wanting to change, you know. Every president I know says a lot of stuff, but it never follows through, so I don't know.
What's Romney's plan?
I think he just leads in all classes and how, I mean, he likes it to be not just one class is superior to the other classes and just right. How he likes just to keep it all in the same, it's just a big change, you know, it's a bigger step up than what it'd be with Obama as the past 4 years way better.
Yeah, now you just talked about him, he's for all classes. Right. You might have heard of the videotape where Romney was overheard saying, you know, 47% of the public don't take personal care or responsibility right. for their lives. That doesn't sound like he's for all classes, does it?
You see, I mean, and that's just what people say. In this case,
it's what Mitt Romney said.
Right. I mean, you know, it could be just for, you know, just to get the upper, I mean, maybe he's going for the upper class or middle class or whatever, just whoever he wants them to get to vote, get more votes. I mean, he might just be saying to get more votes, but then again, you know, whatever the population
he's
for the upper
Sarah
class is, if it's
Palin
bigger than that, maybe
syndrome.
He did that. Just,
makes no
he's got
sense.
I don't know if it's
non sequitur or what, because
like
he's...
That.
He's saying that Romney said those comments that were said in secret and put out in the press for political.
I didn't vote for him. Yeah, I didn't vote for him last time. I see a lot of socialism in him. He hasn't been presidential, and he's too much anger.
He didn't cut the deficit. All he did was spend up more money that our grandkids have to pay back.
That's really what upsets me is my tax money being thrown all over the place, and nothing's really being benefited from it.
What are some of the areas you say it's being thrown at that you don't want it to be?
Normally I know this stuff.
If the
news that's the
media,
guy.
That normally tells us how good Obama is, if they would look into some of the things that are out there so that everybody would know. I mean...
What are some of those things?
Well, like I said, he's been known to be affiliated with Bill Ayers, Reverend Wright,
George Soros, Bill Ayers, Rahm Emanuel, Valerie Jarrett. They've all got a past, but you never hear about that.
So what about Valerie Jarrett? We don't hear about her a lot.
I don't remember everything about her. I just know that she was involved with stuff that she shouldn't have been involved with. I don't remember exactly what because I've got so much in my
bad stuff.
Yes.
He's trying to convince people that he didn't go to that church for 20 years. He was a member of that congregation.
I think he's acknowledged he went there.
Not 20 years.
I've heard some different excerpts from him, how much he loves the Muslim religion.
I think he's got a soft spot for the Muslims.
He's a Muslim. He has a Muslim father. That's his background. And he reads the Quran.
You talked about him going to Reverend Wright's church for 20 years.
Yes.
But now you also think he's a Muslim.
Well, he is a Muslim. His father was a Muslim.
All right, well, speaking of Muslims, although not accepting the absurd premise of those idiots, but speaking of people who are actually Muslims, a lot of the people, there's Christians, Coptic, and other people, but there's a lot of Muslims in Egypt, and the thing is really blowing up again. Have you heard about that in Egypt?
No, what's going on?
Well, it's like this continuation, obviously, of all the people they've had over the last few years, the Tahrir, you know, square. Well, they have that guy in as president now called Mohamed Morsi or whatever, and he's apparently he's affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood, right? Fairly on the conservative side. So basically, the conservative forces have sort of gotten a lot of power in Egypt, and they're trying to put in a new constitution. So
what he did is, this is the maneuver as I understand what he did. He kind of set up, he kind of rope-a-doped, I don't know how to, like, he basically set him up with a constitution about to be voted on in a referendum. They're writing it now because the conservative powers, compared to the more reform and liberal kind of powers in Egypt, have the balance of power in their, like, assembly that's writing the constitution. So he's kind of pushing the constitution through, and he put this, while he's doing that, he put out this emergency decree. So the decree said that he cannot be reviewed, his actions can't be reviewed by any court. And the, like what happened was, during that time, while the decree was in effect, the Constitution was brought a further stage toward being ratified. I think it's supposed to be voted on or something. So, but what he did is, so he distracted the public with this emergency decree, which he has now withdrawn. Now, he, you know, he's managed, though, to put this apparently fairly fundamentalist kind of constitution that people are saying doesn't defend the rights of women and, you know, the minorities of that country and all those types of things. And there's a lot of concern. So the liberals, one of their leaders is that former nuclear inspector Mohammed El-Baradei. So he's kind of cropping up again, because remember, he was one of the people that was talked about as a possible president, but they went with a more, I guess, fundamentalist type of guy. And now there's a bit of a pushback, and they're really protesting this guy, and they're kind of at a point now where they, I don't know if they're smelling blood exactly, like, but they're, they think that because Morsi was had to put the decree back, it's a time to keep pushing instead of fall backward, especially because they have to try to stop that referendum or vote down the constitution in the referendum in order to ensure, you know, a more liberal future for the for Egypt.
So what's the latest thing going on?
They're kind of clashing in the streets. There's like groups of people that are for the more liberal opposition that are kind of like clashing, you know, with the more conservative people. And there's worries that the military, there's always the war, the specter of the military who could go back on the streets and start beating and, you know, raping and doing terrible things like they did when they took to the streets in the last couple of years. And the whole idea of this constitution and stuff is to take the power out of the hands of the military and not have like a military dictatorship and a fairly absolute dictator president, right? But I mean, on the other hand, I think the opposition is are actually the people that come from the Mubarak era. So it can be kind of confusing. There's kind of this reform movement, but the reform movement is actually very fundamentalist. And now they're being opposed. They're kind of in power, and the opposition is the more liberal bloc. So hopefully, like, in my mind, they can stop. Like, this is the time. See, if a country like the U.S. is going to get involved in any of these things, and I don't mean, like, violently, but I mean, like, with, like, support, right? This would be the time to back the protests, because these are probably the people that you want to take over Egypt. I mean, you know, I mean, you don't want this guy that's already tried to decree absolute power while he's practically an interim, this Morsi guy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and what does the U.S. Say they're going to do, if anything?
You know, I feel like the U.S. is laying low, but I haven't been checking, like, you know, what if any kind of diplomatic pronouncements have been made. But, you know, I mean, all I'm saying is there should be some, like, you know, some backing in terms of like money or something for those opposition groups, because I mean, this is the time to help the opposition, you know, like the people, they overthrew Mubarak, right? But the people that overthrew Mubarak, a lot of them were these Morsi people, these Muslim Brotherhood people, which is like, okay, maybe you're a slight improvement, but you're not that much better. And then if you could get that Mohammed El-Baradei kind of people in charge of the country. Like, he did a good job inspecting in Iraq, right? He said there's no reason to wage war. There's hardly any nuclear stuff, like, even you know, like, logistics or capabilities left. No weapons, nothing, you know? And what are you doing? Why are you waging war? You're an idiot, right? I mean, he was the guy that went into there. And there was that Hans Blix guy, but he was sort of a weirdo. And Well, I mean, eccentric Swede or whatever, but also he was the, like, chemical weapons guy. But Verity was the nuclear guy. I mean, you know, like, I don't know. You know what I mean? He seemed to be a pretty solid voice of reason, right? In that period, right? I mean, I don't know that he never made any mistakes or was right about everything, but he was like one of the more statesman-like people during that round. Kofi Annan, I mean, he was against the war, but he didn't quite have even the kind of gravitas that like a Barrett, I thought, you know, like, anyway, not saying the guy is great or he'd even do a good job, just saying, like, come on, you know, for Egypt, like, be better, I would think, to have someone that was, I mean, look at just what they claim to be. Like, he claims to be much more liberal, much more open, much more, you know, willing to have, like, a modern Egypt, you know, and the Morsi people want to just keep them. I mean, you know, it's going to keep them down with all that fundamentalism stuff, right?
It is.
It could be one. Egypt could probably be one of the world's, like, 10 biggest economies or something, like, if they unleash their potential.
Yeah, I've never been there, and I really would love to go visit it. And I think, you know, just like in America, people are starting to fight for their freedoms, you know, and saying goodbye to dictatorships. And, you know, living in America, the news you get is very U.S.-centric.
And slanted and all that, and yeah. And
slanted internationally, definitely. But, you know, this is a similar feeling going on all over the world.
Yeah, I agree for sure. That pretty much sums it up. You know, so to sort of move on from there, iTunes 11 is out, and I just showed it to you briefly, so I can't ask you to give me like a detailed review. But do you have any first impressions of it? The new look for iTunes.
It looked like the App Store.
I bet there's some influence there.
Yeah, that was literally 5 seconds I glanced at the screen and saw you moving things around. That's the impression I got, a bigger version of it. Yeah,
I mean, it's got a little AirPlay button right next to the volume button. It's got, you know, well, if you have that type of, you know, computer, it's got like some iCloud features. But yeah, a lot of the core functionality, fortunately, is still there. So like for people like me that still back their iPhone up to iTunes on the computer plugged in instead of through iCloud, I'm glad that functionality seems to still be there for the most part.
Yeah, and it'll be good to check it out. You know, it's always, I mean, so it's interesting how many versions Apple's put out since they started iTunes and the progression of their updates. And I don't know, there was a time when people were holding on to late versions because they didn't like the new changes.
And, yeah.
You know, hopefully now people are a bit more excited about it. Looking forward to it, at least.
Yeah, you're right. There have been many holdouts. Like, there's, like, iTunes, like, 7, or the 7, like, era is very big. Like, it seemed like 8 and 9 alienated a certain group of people. It's very funny, yeah, that, like, all the different versions. I think there's a version it'll run up to on Wine. So I think people that are Linux users that use the Wine compatibility layer actually have to, you know, use an older version as well, for sure. You know, Snapseed is an app that's out. It's actually owned by Google, but it was a pay app before. Now it's free, and of course, you know, Google having bought it, they had to bring it to Android. So I'll tell you what, I haven't tried Snapseed for Android. Maybe we can review it later, but I do have Snapseed for iOS, and they have like a new version out, and it says Google Plus Snapseed, but you know, it's that one that I was using to make those black and white photos of you and the birds, you know, a day or two ago.
Yeah, I don't have it on my phone, so I'm kind of interested to hear your review of it and if it's worth downloading.
Yeah, I would say it is. It sits kind of in the category of iPhoto or Aviary apps. But the thing about those two is they kind of provide archiving functionality, like where they have like your photo roll there. Snapseed, you can just go to the photo roll. But in that sense, it's like a traditional photo filtering app. But other than that, it's sort of a competitor to those because you have a series of filters you can use. And then there's effects, frames, and tilt shift, Center focus, and then a series of filters under the heading of drama, grunge, vintage, black and white, and then you can crop, you can straighten, turn the, there's different things like tune image and some automatic features. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff that's in, you know, other camera apps. And what's interesting is the interface. You remember I was showing you how you can toggle kind of left and right to get the effect you want, and then you can go, you gesture up and down to get it to the level. So you can tweak the effects, and you can do it very intuitively. Instead of with those meters, you just kind of swipe up and down and left and right. So you can kind of get a feel for that, like, after a while. And so, yeah, I've reviewed some of those other ones, iPhoto for iOS and Aviary. And I think that I still like, I like a lot of things about both those apps. But Snapseed is free now. You know, you should probably download if you have Android or iOS and try it. It is pretty cool as another tool to use to filter. Maybe, you know, you're going to post to Twitter or Instagram. Like with Twitter, you know, it doesn't have those filters yet that Jessica was talking about. And with Instagram, you know, let's put it this way. Your photos are going to look a lot cooler on Instagram, in my opinion, if you use something like Snapseed. You can use iPhoto has a very cool filtering tool, though. It's, you have to kind of like work with it for a while to really get a feel for iOS iPhoto. But, you know, if you use that type of thing, you're doing some filtering that's going to look like really cool, I think. Distinctive. The filters, I really only like two of the filters on Instagram. And I haven't really, you know, I already talked on the podcast about how I stopped using Instagram to post.
Yeah, but I guess as a user of Instagram, you know, I put out only select things, and I only allow select people. I really want artistic, interesting people to be a part of my feed.
Yeah, I still look at my feed on Flip. Oh, I appreciate that. That's very nice. But I enjoy the feed. The thing is, the cool thing is there's a lot of really good photographers still posting to Instagram, and while there still is, I'm gonna follow the feed that I have in the app, or often in Flipboard, and so it's cool to look at those, the photos that you and other people I follow take, and there is a lot of good good photography out there for sure.
Yeah, actually, I'm getting a lot more likes from people I don't know. That's kind of cool.
I think the profiles have opened it up more and people are discovering more, but I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were talking about UI for reading apps.
Yeah. Scrolling, page swiping, exactly. Preference.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that's what it comes down to is, now, traditionally, I think, and then, you know, this is sort of arbitrary, but like reading on the web and... So thus, you know, web reading apps. So whether you're talking about Reader app with the two E's, or you're talking about Pocket app, or one of those, you're going to, you know, when you archive the articles or reading the articles from, you know, you can, you're looking at the content, you just scroll down just like you would in a browser on the web. So if you're reading an article on, if you go to jessica.sf3am.com and it's you search for yoga and you look at one of those older articles that, you know, you might have to scroll as you go down. Well, it's pretty normal to just scroll for people, whether they're using their iPhone or their Android phone or their computer. You know, you scroll up and down, you scroll to the bottom to get to the more of the article. And so web apps have often, I mean, you know, apps, smartphone apps have imitated that a lot. But now, like for Pocket for iOS, when you swipe like you're expecting it to page turn, it'll say page flipping on. It'll allow you to flip. So reading an article, especially like a longer article with numerous, you know, different pages it takes up, you can swipe through it like you're reading on a Kindle app or something like that. And then if you start scrolling up and down, it'll go back to that. So it's very cool and very flexible. And I think that some ebook apps have, and maybe not yet, I don't know. There might be something in some of the settings where you can change from page flipping to scrolling up and down through your books. I thought I heard something about that, but I'm not sure which apps do that and if that's going to, you know, take off. But what do you think? Do you know what I mean? Like, do you think that both is good, or, and what's your preference if you had to, you know, if you had to pick one?
Yeah, I think both are good because I'm just a fan of choice and options. And I think it depends on what I'm reading as to what I like.
Yeah.
When I'm reading a novel, I actually kind of like the page-turning effect.
Yeah, sure.
I think we were discussing before, there's a sort of a psychological effect of, okay, how many more pages left in this chapter? And mm-hmm. you can kind of set, you know, how much you want to read before you have to go to bed if it's a really good book. And then I think if it's articles or PDFs or when I'm reading stuff for, like, you know, classes and stuff, and it's maybe like a 17-page PDF, I like the scrolling because then I can kind of just move through and kind of finish. I guess if I'm reading more efficiently, I'd scroll, and for a shorter period of time.
That's really interesting. So I you know what? I really feel the same way. You know, I feel like I think it's, for me, it's just what I'm used to. But I will you know, I'm used to reading on, you know, articles on the web, scrolling up and down. So if I'm reading in an app like Pocket, then I'll probably just typically use the scrolling. But then if I'm reading in Kindle app, I'm used to the page flipping, and so I'll just do it that way. What about the difference between, I think, the default settings on Kindle app versus iBooks? Because I think it might be changeable, but how there isn't a page flipping effect really on the Kindle app by default, say like on the iOS app, and then there is on the iBooks app. What do you think about that difference?
That there isn't one?
The page flipping effect, because both of them, you flip the page, you know, left and right to go forward or backward in the book, but The iBooks has a little bit of like a page curling right. kind of effect, and the Kindle just kind of moves kind the of text. Slides over, yeah.
I think it's okay. You know, I think it. To me, I think it's more the swiping motion.
So you're pretty neutral on it.
Yeah.
You know, I found I got used to the page flipping on iBooks, and then I went back to Kindle because I'd read a little bit in iBooks, and I was going back to the Kindle app. And it did seem a little strange not to have it, but then pretty soon I was used to it again.
Yeah, I think it just... How do you, if, you know, if you're swiping a lot, it can get tiresome. Left to right, I think. I don't know, versus up and down.
Yeah. So I have another Android app. This is an app that I've been using for a little while, but I figured it'd be best to wait to really discuss it because I wanted to use it for a bit, and then see what I thought of it. So I have this app, Dog Catcher, 2 G's, all one word. It's a podcatcher. It'll take some podcasts, and it will download them if you set them to that. But I have it set to just, you know, notify me, and then I stream them because this is on my tablet. Now this, you know, I have this Samsung Galaxy Tab 7 2.0. it's Samsung branding. So this tablet is a Wi-Fi tablet. It doesn't leave. Now I could say download shows onto it, and then the shows could be listen to when I was out, but this tablet is usually in the house, so I'm going to stream. So I have it set up by default the new episodes are just listed, and then, you know, so I click on the podcast, and you know, I go to the little option button in the right that pops up the the different things you can do, and you hit stream. Now, you know, it can be I think it's a good app. It's a little unpredictable. Like, you know, you have to press. It has some small touch targets, so sometimes you accidentally download instead of stream, and you know. I do think that it works pretty well, and it does allow you to import OPML feeds. It allows you to import by RSS URL. It allows you to search some different directories. Now, here's the problem with the searching, the discovery, it actually is not very good for listing iTunes listed podcasts. And I'll say the DJM Cloud, if you search, I do not think you will find it in the app. Now, different, you know, it might behave differently at different times, but if you search feeds, you're not going to find it. Now, on the other hand, it has these network directories. So if you're it'll like when you're in the ad feed field, it has their dog catcher top feeds, then search feeds, then recommendations, and then categories, and then you can add the RSS feed URL. That brings up this convoluted menu thing, but it works well enough. And then there's virtual feed, make a feed from a directory on your SD card. So that's a pretty geeky feature. I got to give them that. But yeah, I don't think that's that often you're going to do. But let's say you have some audio, like you have some like lectures that you've downloaded. You could string those together into a podcast. You know, I mean, of course, you can just listen through your music app or things like that, too, if you're on, you know, your platform. But I mean, OK, so it also has these directories after the virtual feed. It has Twit network directory, Revision 3 podcast directory. So those are just two tech podcast networks, and I mean, they are popular in the tech community, I think, to some extent, but they're not really that well known outside. Their name doesn't ring out. You know, bring it up around your non-techie family and friends. They probably don't know those brands.
Right.
But I mean, they do very well in their niche, you know, but I mean, it just seems kind of narrow. And then you have YouTube directory. That's kind of neat. Like, I guess you can kind of just, YouTube's kind of all over the place, so you can kind of just watch YouTube stuff like podcasts. I don't know. I haven't really used that feature. But then NPR. Oh, come on. NPR. You know, NPR podcast directory. And that stupid bullshit with Ira Glass and all that. Oh, hokey. It's really hokey. Garbage. So then there's BBC podcast directory. I don't actually know what kind of stuff they have going on. They used to have... Are they the ones that had that Pete Tong podcast? That doesn't exist anymore.
I don't know, but Pete Tong's a great DJ.
I know you're a fan. Then there's import from GReader/listen, so you can import it from your Google stuff, and then import from file, import from web. So there's a lot of ways to get stuff on there. But unfortunately, like unlike the what Instacast and Downcast and ones like that, the official Apple podcast app, you know, you can't find the DJM Cloud podcast easily on this, so you've got to, you know, add in our feed from the web, you know, I mean if it doesn't come up, so that's my, I definitely have that issue with it. We don't come up, but overall this is the overall way it looks. And then when you know you go on to a feed, and then you pick the one. You have to go to that side menu to stream it. And then it streams and plays. Works pretty well.
Nice.
What do you think of the look of it? As an Android app, I know, like, you know, you're not Android user, but the overall look of it, it's basically, you can tell it's basically for the phone. It's not really tablet optimized or anything. What do you think?
It's nice.
You're laughing.
My comment is not a positive one.
I'll
keep it to myself.
Let's take the comment in the spirit of constructive criticism. They might be able to make their app better, or if they're going to come out with an iOS version, let's say, like, they probably need to listen to what you have to say to help make it more palatable to people who love that platform.
Black backgrounds, not a fan.
You're not a fan of black backgrounds. And it is a dark app.
It's really dark.
It's got that kind of, maybe because you can tell with all those tech feeds it has, there's a kind of old school kind of techy vibe. Maybe influenced maybe by Android 3.0. Yeah, it's kind of dark with lines and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, I could definitely see that critique. I mean, it could definitely probably look, you know, sharper, especially if they're thinking about other platforms. But it might kind of work on the, you know, Android 3.4 platform for a lot of its audience. But I definitely see what you're saying. So I don't know if you saw that clip. There's an awesome clip of an African gray parrot. It looks like one anyway. It's a parrot with a beat-controlled scooter.
Yeah, it's so cute. She looks like they're having a lot of fun moving it back and forth and taking it around. And what a cool owner to build that for his bird.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a great little kind of almost AI contraption, little like, you know, but basically just a little bird scooter. And you know, parrots are so smart, and, you know, it figures out like how, you know, that it can perch on it and then, you know, move it up and back and then turn left and right. And it has like, yeah, it's very cool. And of course that bird can walk or fly or whatever, but it enjoys, you know, trying that scooter out. And it really is cool, right? Because we know like birds are really cool. We have our parakeets, but a lot of people sometimes don't realize like that type of bird, how much not only are they cool, but they love to like learn new things and get new toys.
Yeah. And the owner really put a lot of work in with, yeah, bumper control, like if the little device, it's almost, yeah, it's like a little motorized scooter, but if it hits something, it would back up, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
So, you just really think about the safety of the bird.
Yeah.
And I think the bird kind of figured it out pretty quickly and lost its balance a little bit and, you know, fluttered its
wings. On some challenging courses, too. He didn't just put him on, like, a tennis court. He had him going over, like, rocks and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it definitely looks like somebody that has a... It's either maybe he's somebody at a robotics lab, or maybe that's just, like, he's just really good at that, you know, in his spare time. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I thought this is like a good little, this is not really that good, but it's a little, censorship story. Okay. UFC. Okay. These guys, what did they call when they made fun of the Simpsons? The, kick, punch, and choke competition or whatever.
Something like that. Yeah.
Well, it's a sport where one of the cool moves is to try to break your opponent's arm. The arm bar.
Oh, that sounds brutal.
It's big in the women's game. Like, they're UFC is actually just bringing in women fighters now too. There's some pretty good female fighters for sure. Ronda Rousey, I think, is the current champ, and this what she does is she's like a judo bronze medalist from a handful of years ago, like who just goes and grabs people's arms and just turns them around. And then they either break or they tap out.
Oh, ouch. That sounds horrible. Why do people do this?
Because there's those women that are really tough. Misha Tate and other women that are like, they challenge a woman that's like that crazy and that tough. So I got to give it to them. What, Misha Tate, the last fight, I think like she actually, when she fought Ronda Rousey, she got out of one of those arm bars. She pretty much had her in one, and like almost anyone would have tapped. And then the next time, she like, I don't know what exactly happened to her, but you know, she kind of was the low profile for a while because I don't think she actually broke her arm, but she's broken other people's arms. And that person, it was like amazing that she got through one arm bar and stuff. So anyway, yeah, they really, it's a brutal, anyway, so this is the kind of stuff that people do to each other. That, you know, the men's sport is very brutal as well. And these people pummeling each other, right? Okay. And they censor a guy flicking another guy off. They're fighting. They're like wrapped up in each other's legs. The guys, you know, a lot of the guys have like a wrestling game or a ground game or whatever. And they have like, women too. But, you know, like they'll use their legs to wrap somebody up. So they're kind of like wrapped up in each other's legs and like, you know, pummeling, trying to swat at each other. And, one of the guys, you know, he's reaching his arm out. He can't really hit the guy, so he just flicks him off.
And this fighter and his brother are both known for flicking off their opponents. And
yeah,
the UFC is just afraid of the FCC.
Yeah, that's true. You got it.
It's, you know, I mean, the commentary is that, wow, it's sick that we will allow men to beat up one another and women to beat up one another on TV. But, you know, heaven forbid somebody saw somebody give somebody a middle finger.
Yeah, Nate Diaz is the guy that did that. I don't know what I still am a little skeptical of that FCC thing. Of course, the FCC thing. Like, of course, you're looking at cable network self-censor. Anytime they bleep something on cable, right? That's not regulated by the FCC. Cable is regulated by local authorities. we don't need to get into, you know, the telecom regulation, you know, specifics of it. But cable is a phenomenon that it's like county by county or divisions like that authorize cable companies to operate, so that, you know, some areas have monopolies and some don't. And there's different things. Like, I think there's maybe a little more expectation of competition, but there was never the way the phone companies were expected to open up to competition, especially in like the late 90s when that was really hyped up, like the phone competition. Well, phone are sort of considered a public utility, and they're regulated, you know, like, well, they're regulated differently. Like, cable is not regulated very heavily. So if a local authority wanted to make something of it, sure, but that it's not like the FCC is not going to go after people for cable. So, you know, when they play, you know, swear, got to give them credit on South Park, they'll put swears in. Well, it's because they can. There's no problem with it because it's a cable show. Whereas in the Daily Show, when they bleep stuff, no reason to do that.
Right. And now, was this on cable or was this on Fox?
This was on Fox. So that's right. So that was a complete tangent. And let's get back to the point, which is, I still am going to put this out there. FCC has to get a complaint. I'm pretty sure this is still the case. You know, the FCC has to get a complaint about the problem. So the Super Bowl, Janet Jackson, why would anybody complain about something like that? Well, somebody would. There's like supposedly like what, half a billion or 2 billion, or like there's a lot of people watching the Super Bowl. So the FCC is going to get letters about what they didn't like. That's basically what they need to say, I have a complaint from a citizen that I'm acting on behalf of and finding you. So radio shows, there are many late night radio shows, even in Chicago, like rock stations late at night, that would swear late because, well, nobody's complaining. The only people listening to, you know, the only people that were listening to Rock 103.5 in Chicago back in the day in like the, you know, late 80s were just, you know, a bunch of, you know, rock and roll fans. You know, there weren't people worrying about that stuff. So you could fly under the radar as long as nobody complains. Do you know what I mean? So, UFC fans, who's going to complain? Who watching the UFC? They probably already had some fighting, right? The people that are going to complain about that are probably not watching. So I think Fox could have acted on that. Now, maybe there's some trolls out there that or some jerks who would just write in just to harass, you know, Fox. But just if they thought about it, they wouldn't do it. I mean, just there's no reason to do it. People would just laugh and high five and keep watching that thing, right?
Yeah, and they did a really awkward cut their B-roll of, I think, the outside of the stadium.
Yeah, or like the it was really dark. I think it was actually the octagon from much further out, the thing that the ring that they fight in the dark. So it must have been before the show, just given the arrow of time. But it was just like you said, B-roll of like nothing in the dark. They didn't even have like an. I don't know. I guess an interview or something would have been even more awkward, but that would have looked like an honest mistake. That looked like obvious censorship.
It was a jerk move, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess this kind of thing is going to go on too until the FCC's changed. Well, we don't have to worry about the FCC here at the DJMCloud.com podcast, being an internet operation. You can find. You can find more episodes online. Go to the website, djmcloud.com. You can search DJM Cloud in iTunes and in some podcast apps. And, you know, you can find our last 10 episodes there. The website has the whole archive. You can go through 1 through 61. Thank you, Jessica, so much for being the star of the show.
No, not the star. I'm just happy to be here on the eve of a very special day.
Oh, yeah. Then I'm looking forward to tomorrow. So, this has been episode number 61, recorded December 9th, 2012, with Jessica and with me, Dan McKeown. And, okay, cool. Now it's, like, after show time. I could put in some, like, music, have some music come in at this point. What song should I put in for the outro? I should go search this sample. nice song we have in the beginning. I like it. We could build it up.